Hey, Christina, it's so good to be back, and I am thrilled about this session. We've been hearing the entire day about code spaces, so I'm really excited to welcome Matthew and Allison to talk with us more about code spaces.
Yes. So we're bringing in Matthew and Allison from the GitHub team to talk with us about GitHub Code Spaces. And these were actually announced at GitHub Satellite, which took place, I guess, about 2 weeks ago. So do we have Matthew and do we have Allison? Are they available for us? All right. Well, while we were bringing them, oh, yes, we've got them. We've got them. Matthew and Allison, welcome. Welcome. Join us. Welcome to Microsoft Build. And thank you for joining us to talk about GitHub Code Spaces. Again, I know that you've been talking about this a lot over the last, what is it? We are now at like 24 hours. So this is really, really great. Thank you both for joining us. So real quick, just for people in the audience who maybe are, tuning in, it's getting towards the evening time in the UK. Maybe they've missed some stuff. If you can give us an overview of what GitHub Code Spaces are.
Yeah, sure. So GitHub Code Space, really what it is an instant dev environment without ever really ever having to leave GitHub. So you have VS Code and everything that really comes with VS Code available to you. So if that's your extensions, if that's your settings, you really have everything that you love about VS Code available. But it's really even more than that in the sense that you can also have your full dev environment. So you can either, you can run your app, you can debug your app, you can bring your own container, you can configure that container, you can even have a multi-container setup. So it's really incredibly powerful to be able to go from a repo, click open in Codespace, and immediately be editing a project, be running a project, be committing a change, and kind of complete the full developer life cycle.
No, that's so great. And Allison, I've been playing around with this for a couple of weeks now, and it's really great. And I've really appreciated it because it saves me so much time. What are some of the use cases that you've all seen and that you kind of anticipated of why people would want to use Code Spaces?
Yeah, there are a ton of use cases. I actually, is it possible for Matt and I to both show you a couple of demos?
We would love to see some demos. Show us some stuff.
All right. So let me share my
I'm
screen.
excited for all the demos.
Actually,
And this is
no
real
one's.
life right now, folks. Like, this is what live is.
Yeah.
This is what we've all gone through when we're at home and we're dealing with calls. It's dealing with screen sharing. So Allison's just going to pull up her code space.
There we go.
While Allison's, okay.
Here we go.
Yeah, so what I have here is this super simple app that's helping me manage everything going on right now. I'm a mom with two little kids. This is called Preschool Tracker. And what you see is this brand new code menu. And so we'll be able to open with Codespace. I have one already spun up. It takes a handful of seconds to run. And so what you see once it spins up is that you're looking at VS Code, like the editor itself. It's running in my browser in a VM with 2 cores and 4 gigabytes of RAM. Like Matthew said, completely set up, all dependencies running, automatically logged into my GitHub account with even my personal dot files installed. You have full colorization, mini map, even the ability to put breakpoints in. So it's really cool. And the way that this is set up is that I spun up this code space using an out-of-the-box image that has most of what you need already. You can also use a new standard, a dev container directory, where you can define additional requirements like extensions to install or a port to forward to. And if you want even more customization, and to really like tailor your setup, you can create a Docker file in your repo that dictates a custom image that's used to create this container. So, in addition to all of this, we can open a terminal. And you see that my bash prompt is custom, and that's again because my dot files are here, right? So if a dot files repo exists in your GitHub account, then Codespaces makes an immediate connection and copies them into your Codespace. This includes shell aliases and any other customizations that make your developer flow yours, so it always feels like home. I can mouse over, I can hover over this URL and click on it. And you'll see that the URL is localhost, but we are in the cloud. And so what's happening is we've specified in the dev container that we want to run this app on port 3000 and then forwarded that port on from your cloud-hosted machine securely to you so you can see it running live. Just like you would locally.
Very cool.
We'll make a change. Yeah, it's super cool. We're going to make a quick change. And so that's going to be this meeting title that's right here. I don't need the meeting title. And so I want to come back into my code and delete that meeting title. And then you can see if I come back in here and refresh that that meeting title is gone. And even cooler is that you can even commit and push from here. So I can go back here. I can use the Git extension. I can create a new branch. So we'll call this branch meetings, and I can stage it and, you know, delete meeting title, commit it and push it. And now that so we've done a ton of stuff, right? Like we've cloned a repo, we've set up an entire cloud environment that functions just like our local one would. We've spun up a server, we've made a code change, we've committed, we've pushed, and then we've got this handy dandy button right here so that we can go back to our repo and see that that change is committed and pushed and ready to go. So it just allows people to maximize the time that they have available so much. And now I'm going to stop sharing and hand it over to Matthew, who has even more to show.
Yeah, show us what you've got, Matthew.
Sure. All right. So wasn't even available when we did this announcement only 2 weeks ago at Satellite, which is the ability to use Docker Compose to basically configure your environment for a multi-container setup. So I'm going to take this project that I have and I'm going to open it in a code space that I already have. The really great thing you're going to see here is that this project is a set of haikus. They're haikus about my dog.
Nice.
But there's also, which is great, but there's also a database here, and it's a Postgres database, and it's all included inside of my dev container. So what you're going to see is I have a Docker Compose file, and I'm going to make this really simple by just collapsing a few things, just to say, there's a web service here running in a container, and then there's the database. So when I actually go and I run this, we have two containers running, and we're connected to the web app, so we're gonna be able to see and initialize this node process.
Gotcha, so it's gonna be able to connect those together, basically, within your code space. It's going to be able to spin up both of those containers and make them both work together.
Yeah, and what's great is that even, like, I am initializing a database here that has all the haikus in it. There are votes on them. I'm initializing them to zero. And so this script all run sets up my database so that all I have to do when I start actually running the service is npm start, and we have everything running and available, and my app's going to be connected to my database. So this is pulling, you know, these haikus from the Postgres database. And then when I make a change, it's, you know, it's doing a post and it's putting that data back into this database for my dev environment. So this is super powerful to have this multi-container setup. And one additional thing I want to show is, like, if I'm working here and I want to make a change, and let's say I'm changing this JS file, and let's just put in a console log. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, you know, you're going to see I made a change. I could go ahead and I could push this change. But what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to open up VS Code, and I'm actually going to connect to this code space from my desktop VS Code.
Okay.
So what I'm actually going to do, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, okay, so are you going to use like, are you going to use the remote VS Code extension? Is that what you're going to do?
Or how? Yes, I am.
Awesome.
So I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do it actually with the insiders build of VS Code. You don't have to. This works on the regular build. It works in the insiders build. I installed this in my insiders version of VS Code. The nice thing about insiders and VS Code is you can run them side by side and you won't have any issues. So I guess this is a small plug for insiders and that it's great to get the latest changes on a nightly basis.
Like setting sync.
So that's
sync.
Why I like running
like
it.
Setting sync.
Like setting sync, exactly. So it's super compelling to be able to do this. And if you follow the VS Code repo and you kind of follow all the progress there, you can kind of get those changes immediately rather than kind of waiting for that, you know, the monthly rollout of the latest version of VS Code. So what I actually did there was, and I did it pretty quickly, is you saw my list of code spaces. I went ahead and I selected this code space and I said connect, and you'll see it's opening remote in the lower left here. And what's happening is it's actually just connecting to this this code space that we have running, and you'll see I have a change here. So I didn't push anything, I didn't commit anything, but you can see that that console log that I put in on the web is available here because we're just connected to that code space. So this is super powerful if you're, you know, you're making changes, you're in the web version, or you just want to connect in the desktop version, or you just want to, you know, live in your desktop version of VS Code connected to your code space. And I think there's a lot of really compelling reasons for do that if you're, you know, using a much more powerful machine in your code space and you want to use a lighter weight machine and you're running VS Code. Like, it's great to be able to go ahead and connect to that.
No, that's awesome. Let me ask you a question. So when you were showing how you were setting this up with the Docker file, just with the Docker Compose file, if I came across a repo that had a Docker file in it already that it was set up for a project, could I just go ahead and use that Docker file to go ahead and set up my project for me? Or would I need to make some modifications before I could make that create a code space?
You'll probably do a little bit of modification first. The really nice thing about this, and the nice thing about setting it up on an open source project or setting it up on your own project for your team, is it's kind of one of those things that once you configure and set up your Docker file and configure your dev container once, so that basically it's integrated in the way that you want to configure VS Code, like everyone gets those downstream benefits. So it's kind of that small cost of like configuring it. And then kind of every time you run it, like it doesn't really cost you anything. So I think that's the really great part about putting in that initial work for really containerizing your developer environment in general.
Very cool.
This is just mind-blowing, Allison and Matthew. This is incredible. So what I'm hearing is that we are now running Docker instances in the browser. That cannot be true. We can also connect remotely to our Docker instances and see all of the changes that we've made in the browser into our local environment. What is happening behind all this magic? And I know if I wanted to debug my application, like where would I go and do that? Can I do it in the browser? Can I do it in my VS Code instance? Where can I do it?
Yeah, you can totally debug right in the browser. And so what's happening behind the scenes is, again, like a Docker file for a custom image that's used when creating code space, or for some lighter weight customization, you can just use the out of the box image and do some of those specifications via the dev container. Again, the dot files, right? The connection is being made automatically with the repo that has a dot files name in your GitHub account. So it's copying all of those in. You can run any extension. Your code space will sort of go to sleep. It'll hibernate. So after 30 minutes, it will go to sleep. But then you can resume it at any time by just looking at your list of code spaces and spinning one up. It uses the Git extension to commit and push. So it's just sort of like setting up all that initial configuration on your repo or on any open source repo that you're using, and then it's a one click to get going.
I love it. Now, is there a limit to how many code spaces I can have?
At the moment, in our limited private beta, we are capping you at 5, but I think that's still something we're working to as we kind of work through the beta and we kind of make a decision on how many people are using and kind of learn more about the behaviors right now. So I think definitely keep watching to kind of figure out where that lands. But at the moment, you can have five in our limited beta.
Gotcha. And you mentioned limited private beta. Do you have any information? Because we've been getting tons of comments from this about people about when this will be opening up and how they can get access. Because I know tons of people want to be able to use this.
These are the hard questions now. I think soon. I think we don't
soon?
Quite have it.
If all you can say is soon, then that's fine. We just say stay tuned, and we can just say that if that's all you can say.
Just say that.
I'm curious. So you talked a bit about open source contributors. You showed some of the applications and side projects that you worked on, Matthew and Allison. But if you think of some of the use cases that CodeSpaces unlock, like what would be some of those? And who are the people that we're empowering with some of these features?
Yeah, so I think if we, you know, if everything goes and seems to be going the direction that it does, and you know, we've had an amazing reception so far, we're really lowering the bar for programming, both from a software and a hardware perspective, in the sense that one, it shouldn't be hard to get going. You should be able to click open in CodeSpaces on any repo and start being able to run, debug, do all the things you want to do without managing the configuration of your environment. So whether you're you're just learning to code, like it shouldn't be a core competency to programming that you know how to manage two versions of Python simultaneously on a machine. Like that's not programming so much as configuration. So we want to kind of
It's misery is what it is. If we're being honest, managing two versions of Python is misery, but it's okay. Go on.
Exactly. So I think like one, if we could help solve these problems, and that's one, the great thing for getting started in programming, but you know, even if you're experienced, you battle that every day seemingly.
Yeah.
But also if you're in an enterprise environment, like it's much easier if someone has configured a dev container or configured this so that you can get going with the project. Like if you want to be a world-class development organization, it's hard to say that if it takes like 3 days for a developer to get started actually writing code. So I think that's another thing we really want to be able to solve here. I think that's definitely the software piece. And then there's this whole hardware piece of, you know, should it really matter 100% the machine that you're actually using if you're able to harness the power of, you know, a GPU machine or a more advanced machine in the cloud or anything like that? So I think, like, of course, when this was kind of announced at Satellite, iPad came up a lot. I think people were super excited about the idea of using an iPad, using just devices that maybe they aren't able to program on today to be right. able to do that in the future.
We've seen a bunch of really amazing sort of comments and feedback about things that we're already thinking about. So iPad development, use cases for this around, we mentioned open source, but also education, right? There are just a whole bunch of different use cases. And that's as people get access to CodeSpaces, we're really learning more and figuring out how to really dig into making sure that this lowers the barrier to get programming, to get started, to get moving, and really talking to people about what they want and how we can empower and enable them.
That's awesome. No, I it's funny because actually after I saw Satellite, like the first thing I did once I got access was I like opened up my iPad Pro and I was like, let's try this out. And it worked a lot better than I was expecting. So I know it's not an officially supported thing, but it does work, which is mind-blowing, right? Because to your point, we shouldn't have to be thinking about what sort of hardware do we have and what are the barriers to entry there, so that if somebody has a Chromebook, you know, maybe they're a student or they have some other sort of lower powered machine, but they have access to something in the cloud, they can now, you know, have access to these more powerful computing things and build and code and, you know, deploy just like it's a local host, as you were showing in your demo, with the, you know, it's like my browser doesn't know that it's being tunneled through. It just thinks that it's showing something local, where in the meantime, all the compute's actually happening someplace else, which is pretty awesome.
And Christina, you talked a bit about that, where we don't, like, the compute, where is it even? And then we're looking in our browser and in our local, and it looks like we're working with an IDE, but are we really working with an IDE? Like, what's the difference between CodeSpaces and a regular IDE?
I mean, CodeSpaces is a VS Code in the browser. So it really, you know, it sort of is your full ID. You saw that, you know, because we were in a VM, we opened up the terminal, we can debug, like we have all of our extensions. All of that is available to us just in the browser.
Yeah, I think definitely there's a lot of extensions that I know that people love to bring with them and that they feel are, you know, very much, it doesn't feel like home unless you have those extensions as well. So whether that's ESLint or Prettier or whatever those things are that you kind of use and help you shape your code the way you want it to look. And whether if you're in an organization where everyone tries to, you know, hopefully write very similar code kind of in style, like you can bring all those things with you. So it's not just, you know, you have an editing canvas, it's IntelliCode, it's your extensions, it's all those things that you rely on available to you as well.
I love that. And I also love that the dot file integration, frankly, I think that's so great because I know that so many of us like are very specific about our dot files. And that's usually one of the first things I do when I get on any machine. You're probably the same way, Simona, right? Like the very first thing you do is I go and I'm you know, Git cloning like my dot files no matter where I am. And the problem is that sometimes you're on a machine that doesn't belong to you. And yeah, that's not necessarily the most secure thing to do, right? So this is also kind of a great experience, I would think, for people who are, you mentioned enterprise earlier, and this is not only, I think, a great way for people in enterprise to be able to spin up and get started on a project instead of having to take 3 days to kind of get to know your dev environment, but also it's a situation where it's like, if you are, you know, using a machine that might not be solely yours, and you don't feel fully comfortable having all of your tooling and your tool chain and your dot files and your aliases and your preferences set because you don't want to overwrite someone else's or you just don't want them to have access to your stuff, this kind of creates a much more, you know, a siloed way of doing that that's both safe but also still gives you access to all the stuff you want.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a productivity thing, right? Like when you're on a new machine, you just, when you have that muscle memory of all of your aliases and how you're used to working and, you know, all of those shortcuts that you use. And so, you know, if you're on a different machine and all of a sudden none of that is available to you, it can also be a pretty frustrating experience because you keep, you know, typing those shortcuts just because they're muscle memory, they're in your brain, et cetera. And you have to, you know, go back and remember like, wait, I use this shortcut, but you know, what is this? Or so, you know, it also is a productivity thing and makes it more, more comfortable for you to just work on different machines or, you know, get started quickly. Especially if you're making small changes or, you know, things here and there, it's really incredible.
And I know what you've just released and you're still in beta and people are still waiting to kind of get started. But as you're building this, would you mind sharing what are some of the key things that are on your roadmap and things that you're excited about building on CodeSpaces?
Yeah, I would say probably the biggest one that's getting a lot of enthusiasm is right now in the beta, it's available for individuals. And I think a lot of people want to use this and we know they want to use this in their organization. So that's probably the biggest item coming is that we're going to support organizations and organization policies and things around that to make these super configurable. So that's probably the biggest one. And then I think that we're hearing a lot of excitement again around whether it's things like iPad or things like managing secrets and things like that. So I think those are also in the roadmap and have been a really great source of early feedback from our users.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I know that we haven't really talked about this publicly, but again, we've kind of seen this question. Is there any word on pricing or when we might know more about that?
That's also a stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Okay, cool. So stay tuned for when you can get access and for more information on pricing. But obviously, Matthew and Allison and the rest of your team, you're taking feedback from users. And I'm sure that that's you're looking and wanting to iterate all of that. Let me ask you this as we have a couple of more minutes. You know, so this has been, I guess, kind of available to in your private beta. It was announced, what I guess, about 2 weeks ago. What's been the most gratifying, I guess, reaction you've seen so far from hearing from people who are actually using CodeSpaces?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think initially, you know, and I'll just mention that if you want early access, if you want to sign up for the list to get access, you can go to github.com/features/codespaces. But one of the most gratifying things has just been seeing the tremendous response. You know, I think that people are recognizing that this unlocks a whole lot of doors and opportunities, and it's been amazing, you know, watching tweets about it and people's reactions and seeing people sign up and just how excited they are. I mean, that has been incredibly, incredibly gratifying and amazing. Matt, what do you have to add?
I think one of the most awesome things about working at a company of developers is you're working with all of these people that love to play with the new things you announce. So people will pop into our chat channels all the time and be like, hey, I wanted to like share this thing that I've been working on, or I wanted help with this. And just the things that our coworkers, even, you know, people at GitHub, people at Microsoft are like sharing with us that they've been doing in the beta is just like mind blowing. And it's one of the most fun parts of working at a place like GitHub or Microsoft and things like that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Let me ask you this question. Maybe this is being presumptive, but even though it's still in private beta and people can go to github.com/features/codespaces to get on the list to learn more, if, for instance, I wanted to go through the process of maybe committing like a Docker Compose file to one of my favorite repos so that it would be ready for Codespaces, is that something that maybe people should start about thinking doing now, getting their things ready in advance, even if a lot of users don't have access to it yet? Would you recommend that or hold off? What are your thoughts?
I think that's a great way to get started. I think there have been also some excellent talks that I saw go by, but I haven't watched all of them yet. I think Chris Diaz did one on remote container development. So I think there have been a lot of good other build talks that I would recommend checking out on using remote containers and kind of getting set up with using Docker and VS Code and things like that. So I think to your suggestion, I think it's a great idea to start exploring those for sure.
Awesome. Simona, you've been playing with this, right?
Yeah, I've actually been toying with a lot of this just since the other day when I got access. And I've been super excited about trying it, running it in my browser and kind of doing live share and all of the debugging and cool features that are available with Codespaces. It's really exciting.
No, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much, Allison and Matthew, and of course, Simona, for talking to us about this. This is so exciting. And for more information about GitHub Codespaces, as we said, you can go to github.com/features/codespaces. So you can get more information. You can get on the list. It is, you know, still in private beta, but stay tuned for more information about that, as well as some of the other details that we didn't quite get to. But Matthew and Allison, thank you for showing us how cool this stuff is. I love living in the future. It's just the best.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so